You've heard the old saying, no ice is 100% safe. Steve Thompson in for Henry Lake on the Lake Show, Chris Tubbs alongside. And I've talked with Steve Kearney on weekends for years about the outdoors. And in the summer, whether it's fishing, in the fall, hunting season, or in the winter, ice fishing, we've talked for years. And he says the same thing. No ice is 100% safe. He's never felt comfortable driving a vehicle like his truck out on the ice. He just has said that for a long time and is very careful when using an ATV or a snowmobile, etc. And there's a story at our website, WCCORadio.com, and Taylor Rivera did it. You heard Taylor a moment ago on the news. After three vehicles fell through Lake Minnetonka this week, the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office is reminding people to think twice before going out on the ice. Yes. And most of us grew up in these parts. I know there are people that were born and raised in other parts of the country that have made their way to the upper Midwest. But I've always said, for the most part, you're kind of born into winter. There aren't a lot of people that choose to go through a winter, even though we've been spoiled the last couple of winters, for the most part, here in the upper Midwest. That a year ago, we hardly had any winter, and we did have a cold snap. But it is, after all, the final day of January, and it's just been an unusually gorgeous week. Well, you should know what that does to ice conditions. Number one, the sun. I had a backyard rink. When I was a kid growing up, my dad got it started. When we lived over on Maryland Avenue in St. Paul when I was real young, right by Como Park, we always had a backyard rink. Ever since I can remember, my dad and grandpa would go out and get out the garden hose and start a rink. And then when we moved out to the burbs to be closer to my dad's job, we always had a rink growing up, and what is really tough on the ice is the sun. It's not so much a cloudy 35-degree day. A 28-degree day with no clouds and the sun beating down on it really has an impact on the quality of ice as well on a skating rink or a backyard rink, and anybody who's had a rink knows that. And we just haven't had, in my opinion, and I've never felt comfortable doing it either, driving around on the ice in a motor vehicle, even up north way back in the day. Never liked it. Never liked the whole ice road trucker vibe where it's kind of like, all right, we could go in at any moment and we'd need to bail out. And that, to me, when it starts to get cold in the fall, and you start to see ice forms or ice form on the ponds and the small lakes, and then you inevitably, and I'm not talking kids, and kids need to be warned and trained to stay away, but the number of adults that still wander out on thin ice, put first responders in danger, it's absolutely insane to me at this point that we do this story every year and law enforcement, local law enforcement, the sheriff, the DNR, stay off the ice. They got to put up the signs. And here's the thing. Okay, I know you want to go out there and drive around or drive out to your fishing spot, but you're putting a lot of other people potentially at risk. And you're potentially spending a lot of money. Taylor's story, you know, talked about it, and I think a lot of people are familiar. Your vehicle goes through the ice. I don't care if it's an ATV or a snowmobile or a mini bike or a motor vehicle, a car or a truck. You are responsible to pay to get that thing out of there. Chris, I don't know how you feel about it, but this to me is just silly that we go through this every year where you have to tell adults, please stay off the ice. It's not safe. three vehicles on Minnetonka this week. It's nuts.
Yeah, to me, it's just, I would not, kind of like you, Steve, there are certain times I wouldn't be comfortable in this kind of weather. No. When we get to a point where it is not a couple of inches, at least a couple of inches thick, I don't want anything to do with going on it, and yet you're putting a vehicle on very thin ice. No pun intended. To me,
well, and a couple of inches isn't even enough.
I mean,
they're those charts that they put out like the DNR does. And let's just spell it out real quick. For a human to walk out, they say a minimum of 4 inches. And this is from the DNR. And Steve Carney says this. Ice is never 100% safe. 5 inches for a snowmobile, 8 to 12 inches of good ice for a car, 12 to 15 for a pickup truck. So,
I think I've always gone with a minimum of 4 for me to go out on the ice.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and I guess when I said a couple, I was being general.
No, I understand.
So yeah, to me it's always 4 at a minimum for me to even go out onto the ice. If we're at a point where I feel like I could wear a t-shirt outside, I'm not going to go on the ice. I mean, I'm not going to put my vehicle on the ice when I can wear a t-shirt and shorts.
And once again, we just haven't had a traditional, good old-fashioned winter where it's gotten cold and stayed cold. Now, I am no expert on ice, but I've been around enough and had enough backyard rinks to know what that sun on a 35, 40, 50-degree day has on the quality of the ice. It is very impressive, the power of the sun on that ice. So once again, and I'm not talking about Mille Lacs or you go way up north and people go out on the ice on Red Lake, whole different deal. Plowed roads, people checking, etc. Completely different deal than what we see on a lot of the lakes in the cities where people are like, hey, let's hit the public access and drive around on the ice for a while. To me, based on what we've seen weather-wise, last couple of winters at least, it's nuts to me.
Yeah, and from the text line here, I live on Lake Minnetonka, it's the pressure ridges that people are getting too close to.
Oh, for sure. And then every once in a while you see people driving in the channels, etc. And that is a great point. And here's the thing. It is getting to the point, and you can't pass a law for everyone's stupidity in every situation. But I think the fines need to be bigger. In addition to the expense, if you're going to drive around on a lake and you certainly don't heed the warnings if it's not safe to drive out there, I think the penalties need to be greater. You put your vehicle in the drink, beyond the expense of getting it out, there needs to be more severe penalties for that type of behavior, because in reality, what you're doing is you're putting first responders at risk. I think the people that go around on ice that isn't safe or go out there early in the year or go out there late in the year and roll the dice and so on and so forth, you're putting other people at risk. And that's what's really frustrating. All right, let's jump to the phone lines here on News Talk 830-WCCO. Who we got, Chris?
We've got Jerry from Matamidi wants to weigh in.
All right, Jerry, you're on the air. Jerry, your thoughts on the people that just want to roll the dice and go out there on the lake when it's not safe.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate the call. Appreciate the show. I was just saying, you know, when you look at it structurally, you know, the DNR can publish those thicknesses, but like you nailed it, no ice is 100% safe. And what happens when you line up car after car after car and house after house and supplies and equipment? And, you know, the risk is there, but structurally, there's a breaking point, you know, and when you look at even a building, you know, they engineer it structurally to carry a load. But what is the load on that piece of ice? And then it's not a manufactured steel beam or anything. It's just Mother Nature. So
yeah.
Every time you go crawl out there on the news today, they said 32 inches on Mille Lacs Lake. Oh, that feels pretty safe to me.
Oh,
but
for
see
sure.
How those ice fishes out with caterpillars.
Yeah, you know? There's no doubt. Or you go up to Lake of the Woods, and they've got the ice roads, and they've got the big fancy houses out there that people spend the night in. I get it. I just think, you know, here in the cities and the weather we've seen, and I think someone made a good point, that comparing lake ice to the ice in a backyard skating rink, I get all of that. But when you get a warm spell, and we have not had a traditional winter, you know, we've had a lot of warm stretches, and I just can't imagine that there's ice safe. Now, the texter said, check the ice on the path I was going on, and there was 18 to 20 of clear, solid ice. Now, most charts would say that's okay. And another text said, you know, the pressure ridges. I think local knowledge is a big part of it. What worries me is there are people that aren't careful, that don't know the lake, don't know where the channels are, don't know where maybe some of the streams come into the lake, et cetera, where the ice could be less. I just think there's a lot of people taking undue risks, and that puts other people at risk. And that's my concern.
Yeah, I agree. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for the call. Have a good weekend. Good call. And it is one of those things that we deal with every year, and that is my concern. You know, who are you putting at risk? It's like the idiots driving 95 miles an hour on the freeways around town, weaving in and out of traffic. It's just absolutely insane to me. You know, if you want to drive like that, but there are other people on the road. Like I say, I was going over to a ball game last night. Once again, putting others at risk is really the conversation here. Drove over to Creighton Durham Hall and spent a fair amount of time on the freeway, 35W. Headed south, took 280, jumped on 94, took Snelling south down to Creighton and did the ball game. And by the way, number one 4A stayed unbeaten last night with a win over Irondale at Joe Maurer Fieldhouse. But my point being is there are a number of drivers where it's like you're driving insanely fast. There's no reason for that. Why are you putting everybody else at risk? It's incredibly selfish. And, you know, going through the ice once again and taking that risk. Okay, well, you know, it's my business. Not really. It really isn't.
Yeah, and that's just where, Steve, we need to kind of think of the totality, that what we do, it could ultimately have a ripple effect with other people. And that's really just it. I mean, we do think that, okay, yeah, I'm going to do this, and ultimately, you know, if something happens, it's going to be on me. But, yeah, I mean, nobody wants to see anything bad happen to anybody. And yeah, you just think about everybody else that's out there, because, I mean, we're all sharing it together. Like, we're all Minnesotans just trying to enjoy, you know, enjoy life together the best that we can.
Yeah, so don't be an idiot.
God, I had good vibes, and you're like, don't be an idiot. I'm like, yeah. I'm trying to go kumbaya.
I'm trying to bring it back around.
You know, for once, I'm finally the kumbaya guy, and you're like, don't be an idiot.
Yeah. By the way, I can't
be the voice of reason, Steve. I just can't. If I'm the voice of reason, then this thing is going to go downhill quick.
Yeah. Check out Taylor's story at the website, WCCRadio.com. Ice danger. Be careful out there. It makes me very, very nervous. By the way, we're going to talk more about speed on the roads a little bit later on in the hour. There's more to that story, and some municipalities are trying to crack down. We'll get into that. When we come back, though, however, this is one of my favorites. And Chris Tubbs is going to give us Bite of the Night in a moment. Steve Thompson in for Henry Lake. Chris Tubbs here. Chris, I'm ready. Bite of the Night. What do you got?
All right. So this kind of goes back a little bit to maybe a couple of months ago when the ESPN 30 for 30 on the New York Sack Exchange, which had Mark Gastineau. And if, you know, football fans, if you remember Mark Gastineau, he was just a beast. Absolutely a phenomenal defensive lineman. Well, he had the all-time sack record until Michael Strahan sacked Brett Favre. And, you know, when Favre was playing with the Packers. And, you know, when you take a look at it, it's like, well, you know, Brett Favre just kind of slid to avoid the tackle. Well, Mark Gastineau, about a couple months ago, there was some video that came out. Mark Gastineau confronted Brett Favre and claimed he took a dive on the play and therefore cost him the single-season sack record. We're going to play that audio for you and then kind of explain the follow-up to this piece of audio. So if you have not heard it, here's Mark Gastineau at a signing confronting Brett Favre.
We met a long time ago. At least I saw you.
Right.
How you doing?
When you fell down for him. I'm going to get my sack back. I'm going to get my sack back, dude.
You probably would hurt me.
Well, I don't care. You hurt me. You hurt me. You hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
You really hurt me. You hurt me, Brett.
We got to get back to this, Brett. I'm sorry.
Anybody will tell you Brett Favre took a dive. And you know it. She knows it. He knows it. And everybody knows it.
So essentially, that's Mark Gastineau confronting Brett Favre and saying that Brett Favre took a dive to give Michael Strahan the record. Well, then, and then the follow-up to this was Brett Favre believes that the Mark Gastineau exchange was a setup by ESPN and NFL Films. I think he was on the Michelle Tafoya podcast. And he said that I really think it was a setup by ESPN and NFL Films because there was a camera hiding over this divider. You know, he goes on to say there are athletes from all sports. Generally, it's retired guys. So you encounter a lot of different guys. I had no clue. I really think it was a setup. He's like, now I think Mark has got some serious concussion issues, but I'm not a doctor. I'd never met him before and actually came up to the table. He's still a big guy. I was just signing. I looked up and said, hey, Mark. And right away, I knew that he wasn't all there. Honestly, I was thinking the last thing I want to have to do is fight this guy. And Brett Favre feels that he got ambushed. And I can kind of understand Brett's point with that. But at the same time, he has to know who had the record before. He had to have known who Mark Gastineau was.
There's a lot going on here. Number one, records in sports are meant to be broken. And if it bothers him this much to confront Brett Favre, I kind of feel sorry for him on some level.
It's kind of the only thing that he's got. You know, that's his legacy, right? Like that, I feel like he feels like that sack record is his legacy. Without that, he's a forgotten person in the NFL history, and I don't think that way at all.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. And if he is dealing with some sort of injury and the effects of that injury, whatever that is, I feel bad. Now, I'm not defending Brett Favre on any level. What I know about Brett Favre, You're not going to get me to feel sorry for him on too many issues whatsoever. That is really unusual. And in some way, it almost kind of feels like set up that way.
Because the film crew was there. If you see it, the film crew was there. The camera crew was there. Well, it's the same. Yeah. The film crew, camera crew, it's the same thing. That was really smart on my part. But
I like Mark Gastineau as a player. I haven't forgotten about him.
No, but
I really liked him as a player.
Well, I did too. I really did. But you do kind of feel that sometimes these guys, they like if they lose that one record or that they lose that one thing that they can claim as theirs, then they're nothing. You know, they're just kind of wasted away with everybody else. And to me, I love Mark Gastineau as a kid. Like he scared the hell out of me, and I mean that as a compliment.
Yeah, I still think, though, of all the defensive players I've seen over the years, and he always shows up among the greatest players of all time, and that is Lawrence Taylor. I still feel defensively, did Lawrence Taylor have a peer? You think about Mike Singletary and Dick Butkus and some of these other intimidating players. But for me, when you look at the greatest football players, because defense, offense, special quarterbacks, etc. They kind of have their own category. Mm-hmm. Defensively, though, LT is always number one.
Oh,
you know that he to me. And then you got, you know, Jim Brown, running back. You could argue that maybe Barry Sanders, some would say, but and then you got Tom Brady at quarterback. You got Jerry Rice at wide receiver. I don't think too many people would argue that Randy Moss was better than Jerry Rice. I don't think with a straight face you can say that. Randy was great, but was he Jerry Rice?
No.
Probably not. So it is interesting, though, about Gastineau. And Favre does make a compelling point, though, is that if someone suffered an injury and is dealing with the long-term effects of potentially a head injury suffered during football, that's got to be a concern. And once again, I feel bad for the guy. You know, I really do. And like I say, I'm not a Favre fan for a number of reasons. It is 7:31 here at News Talk, 830-WCCO. A number of times on the weekend, and I think even here on the Lake Show, Steve Thompson in for Henry Lake, typically in on Saturdays, we've had Mike Hansen, the director of the Office of Traffic Safety with the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, former trooper, and he's been in that role now for a number of years, and is good enough to join us and talk about the rules of the road and enhanced enforcement initiatives that are going on, etc. And since COVID, one of the great concerns on our roads all over the state, and for that matter, I would assume it's everywhere in the country, is how fast people are driving. And that people are driving way too fast, whether it's on city streets or county roads or on our freeways around the metro area. That excessive speed is a problem. And there's a story in the Star Tribune that came out today. And I think it's really interesting, you know, on how did they come up with the speed limits and how they were set. And that some cities have lowered their speed limits. Minneapolis, New Brighton, Ridgefield have changed speed limits on their roads. And it's a fascinating read, and it gets into some of the history of speed limits. Remember during the and maybe you're old enough to remember during the energy crisis of the 70s when they rolled back speed limits on all highways to the double nickel, 55. And Sammy Hagar, the Red Rocker, did that song, and it still gets airplay. I Can't Drive 55. And I have to admit, when you would drive on rural highways where the speed limit was still 55, it felt ridiculously slow. So that's been modified. I know in South Dakota, when we drive to visit the in-laws, my wife's family, you hit the border and the speed limit's 80, and it's like, whoa!
I know. Well, you want to get You know, the reason it's 80 in South Dakota is because you want to get through South Dakota as fast as you can.
Whoa.
I mean, that's really high. Yeah, that's.
I thought you liked your time there.
I did, but I mean,
come on, man.
Well, I mean, Google it. It's on the internet, so it's got to be true.
But so they changed the speed limits, and once again, 55. I remember when we were making the trip, I was born and raised here in the cities. My wife was born and raised in South Dakota. So over the years and all these years of marriage and kids and me driving to the cities to visit my family or vice versa, that we used to take the interstate all the way. We would get on 90, go all the way to Albert Lee, and take 35
make
up
the L
to the cities because the speed limit was higher. And then once they changed from 55 and raised the speed limit on rural highways, like 169 and then 60 out of Mankato over to Worthington, that it made more sense to go that way. That, you know, going all the way over to Albert Lee and then going north.
It was just extra mileage you didn't need to put on your car.
Extra miles, and you could. You could pick up time going the other way.
Yep.
But when the speed limit was 55, it made more sense time-wise to go to Albert Lee and then up to the cities from there. But so the speed limits have changed. And now what they're trying to do is tweak speed limits around town, especially in cities. And I think one of the things that's brilliant, and I wish every city would, is on city streets, I'm not talking about the main arteries. I'm not talking the snow emergency routes, if you will. On your average run-of-the-mill city street, anything over 20 miles an hour is too fast. It really is.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about residential and business areas.
Absolutely. Residential areas, for sure. Now, you get on the main drags, And they're wider, and maybe you got two lanes in each direction and a turning lane. You know, I feel more comfortable with 40 or 45 or even 50 miles an hour. But on residential city streets or in towns, I never go fast. I mean, in my neighborhood, I even think 15 is plenty.
Yeah.
On some of these streets.
Well, and I mean, what I don't like, too, is if you're in an area and you're not familiar with it, like, to me, common sense would say at least slow down if you're unfamiliar with the intersections or the curves or anything to do. I see people, because we live in a subdivision and we're, you know, on the end with our townhouse. We live in an area where it can kind of be busy, but you can tell those that are unfamiliar. I would rather have you go slow and creep and look rather than just speed through, because we've got kids. It's a very family friendly area. And it's, again, it just comes down to common sense. Like, I would not feel comfortable going well over the speed limit when I'm in a residential area.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And it all gets back to excessive speed and what's safe conditions. And I still maintain that the speed at which some people travel on the freeways and highways around town, it's insane to me. And I know law enforcement has their hands full, and there's only so much that can be done. They can't be everywhere. They can't pull over everyone. But this story really speaks to the city streets and trying to slow people down. Richfield, for instance, went from 30 to 25 miles an hour on residential streets. And once again, that seems a little fast still. And I get it. And it's all about how much you can enforce it. But the good news in the story is that by dropping some of the speeds, that they are seeing positive results. And I think when you couple that with enforcement of distracted driving laws and hands-free laws and people not using their phone or using electronic devices or shaving or putting on makeup.
Do you still see people do that?
Oh, for sure.
Really? Are they like
the electric razor? Oh yeah.
No,
absolutely.
People don't still absolutely. Do that. Do they really?
Makeup. Now, I will say this, that I try not to eat on the fly when I'm driving. On occasionally, I may pop a chicken nugget in the mouth while I'm on the fly.
You don't use sauces though when you're driving though, right?
I'm not
dipping in that honey mustard, Steve, are you?
And how did you know? That was my favorite. I do like some of the barbecue.
I know you. I've known you for
how long?
The
honey mustard, that's good with the nuggets. So I will admit, I'll go into the bag and grab a fry or two. I'm not trying to consume a Whopper on the move, however. Can you imagine?
You're a lightweight.
Or
come
a
on.
Big Mac. You know, eat a Big Mac or a Whopper on the move.
You got to try like the big. You got to try the big Italian like sandwich from I think it's Wendy's where you take it out and you got like lettuce all over and you're like, well, this was not the best idea I've ever had in my life.
Yeah,
hypothetically speaking, I'm not.
You can't in reality eat a Jersey Mike's or a Jimmy John's. I'm sure it's been done, but I think bigger picture. This is a really interesting story about trying to get people to slow down on the roads, and I think it's a wonderful cause. Hey, we got a break. We have headlines coming up. Following the news and weather at 8, Stephen Clark will join us from Ars Technica. We'll talk space flight. There is a lot going on. Now, say what you want about Elon Musk and his involvement in politics. But there are some very interesting things going on in human spaceflight. And then, of course, Jeff Bezos. Say what you want about Jeff Bezos of Amazon fame. But there is a budding rivalry there. And then beyond that, reminiscent of the Cold War, there is a real space race going on between the United States of America and China. It used to be the old Soviet Union and the United States. And Russia is still a player in space, but China is the next big player in outer space and beyond. So we'll get into all of that with Stephen following the news and weather at 8. But headlines in a moment. Without further ado, Chris Tubbs brings us headlines. Chris, what do you have?
Well, I've got some news stories. Some you may have heard, some you may not have. Charges have been filed in Tuesday night's assault of a high school athlete during a prep basketball game at Robbinsdale Cooper High School. Officials say a 17-year-old player on the visiting team from Fridley was hit on the top of his head with a tire iron by one person and beaten and nearly stabbed by two others. Court records filed Thursday show three males in their late teens are all charged with second-degree assault and second-degree riot. Suspects are identified as 18-year-old Yaya Kanari, 18-year-old Dursa Mohammed, and 19-year-old Ayab Ali. Mohammed was also charged with fleeing a police officer. Two juveniles were also arrested. The teen who was attacked was taken to the hospital and needed six staples to close the laceration on his head. The three suspects were due in court this afternoon.
Do we know a motive? I've heard the story, and I do a ton of high school sporting events. On streaming services and local cable TV, fall, winter, spring, you name it. If someone's willing to give me a few bucks, I'll go out and call a game. I've never seen anything like this.
I've seen
scraps where there's pushing and shoving and people get emotional, but not people coming into the building. I want to know more. What is going on here?
Yeah, as far as I know, I have not seen a motive. Now, maybe if there's something that is, you know, recent, but yeah, I have not seen a motive.
Yeah, I have not.
I mean, somebody just walks into a gym and takes a tire iron and just, I mean, an active participant?
Well, it's reminiscent of the story not that long ago at the Y in Edina where some guy is in there and a group of 10, 12 people come in and beat this guy up. Now, like I say, I'm not exactly sure what the motive is or what is going on, but once again, innocent until proven guilty, I get all of that, but the perps should be punished.
Yeah, absolutely, sure. Absolutely. Guilty. Hey, let's go down to the business story here, Steve. President Donald Trump says he will impose his tariffs over the weekend, gambling that taxing American companies for imported goods will ultimately punish the countries that make stuff Americans want and bring those nations to the negotiating table. Now, it's a risky bet that could easily backfire on the American consumer and the economy. In the United States, tariffs typically serve a limited but important purpose. They're intended to grow America's economy by incentivizing the purchase of made-in-the-USA goods. They accomplish that by effectively penalizing American companies that buy foreign goods with high taxes. Economists largely believe that in limited circumstances, tariffs can be effective tools for economic growth, but Trump believes that the tariffs will have an altogether different purpose. Now, Trump has long praised tariffs as effective economic policy. On Monday, Trump called the tariff the fourth most beautiful word in the dictionary behind God, love, and religion. And Trump has repeatedly and incorrectly said that the tariff sheriff, former President William McKinley, ushered in an era of American prosperity at the end of the 19th century by going all in on tariffs. Though the economy was growing strong in the 1890s, that was largely on the back of practically unrestricted immigration, amongst other factors. Now, Trump's proposed tariffs could add $272 billion a year to tax burdens, according to Carl Shimada, the chief market strategist at the Corpay Cross Border Solutions. The Peterson Institute has estimated that Trump's proposed tariffs would cost the typical U.S. household over $2,600 a year. Still, some proponents of Trump's plan say the risk is worth the reward. CEO of J.P. Morgan, Jamie Dixon, last week told CNBC that if tariff caused a little bit of inflation but addresses a national security, then people should, quote, get over it.
Yeah, and I think it's easy for someone like Jamie Dimon from J.P. Morgan Chase, who is worth an unlimited amount of money, to say people should get over it. I think that's tone deaf. I think especially when a lot of people voted their pocketbook and were concerned about inflation and the price of everyday items, whether that's eggs or whatever. I don't see how this has a positive impact, and it would take years to bring the manufacture of some of these goods back to American shores and restart factories. Years. This wouldn't take months. It would take years. And I think ultimately economists across the board, there are very few that would say, oh, you know, that won't have an impact on prices. Things will be more expensive. There's no doubt about that. Things will be more expensive. Tariffs are paid by the people buying the goods, period. It won't be paid by Canada or Mexico or China. It is the tariffs are paid by the people that purchase the goods.
Yeah, and I want to stay on this for just a little bit here, Steve, because initially I kind of put together a segment later on in the show to kind of piggyback off of this. But I just kind of want to address it here in a couple of minutes. And a question with kind of like what we're hearing. Again, JP, Morgan, the CEO, definitely can absorb that. I guess here's my question. If $2,600 a year is what it would cost you for an aggressive pursuit of immigration, to crack down on immigration, is that a trade-off that people are willing to make? To say, hey, okay, because I mean, maybe products will eventually get lower, but as for right now, the tariffs, you're right, that's a burden that the consumer is going to have to bear. So that $2,600 a year, based on this economist, I mean, these are not numbers that we are making up. These are numbers that have actually been floated out there by economists and analysts. Is that enough when people are struggling paycheck to paycheck and you look like you're going to get paid, but you know that the bills, your rent, your car insurance, your phone, your child care, all of that is already allocated and you've got maybe $100 that's going to last you until your next paycheck and you're already stressing about it? That extra $2,600 that you're going to have to pay over the course of a year, is that worth it? for people to have this aggressive crackdown on immigration, which has been a problem? Like, I don't know, because some people can absorb it, but other people, you break that down, every penny matters to a lot of people. So I don't know if that's a number. It doesn't look like a big number, but I think when you put it into action, I mean, that could be a substantial amount for people.
Yeah, and once again, that gets back to the political risk of, you know, taking this task. All of a sudden, the stuff people are buying at Walmart or Target or any other retailer or online at Amazon or anything else, all of a sudden become a lot more expensive. And the idea is, yes, the short-term pain will last X amount of time, and then we guarantee things are going to be better. One thing about extremely complicated issues, I don't think there are any guarantees. And that's the part. It's a roll of the dice. News and weather in a moment.